Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, everyone. Today's episode is a special one. We've got Charlie Bushnell here to deep dive into Luke with us. But before we get into it, spoiler warning for the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series, both the books and the TV show. We won't be talking about Heroes of Olympus or Trials of Apollo for once, but we will be spoiling the first season and the entire first book series. So if you haven't read through The Last Olympian, please do that before listening to this episode. We're going to be talking all the way through the end here. Also, if you hear us referencing the shirt that Charlie is wearing, it's because he showed up wearing the Kleos shirt from our merch shop, which was a wonderful surprise. Thank you, Charlie. Unfortunately, we weren't recording the Zoom yet when he showed us, but Emily and I were both recording our own audio, so I can play a clip of our reactions at least here. I mean, I think that's kind of... Wait, oh my god!
Oh my god.
I still need to buy one. I still don't have one. And for the record, I do now have one. All right. That's it from me. Enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone. And welcome to Monster Donut, a literary and historical deep dive into the Percy Jackson series and all of its following spin-offs. I'm Phoebe, a dramaturg and story consultant.
And I'm Emily, a classic scholar-ish.
And today we are joined by the incredible talent that brought Luke to life in the Percy Jackson TV series. It's Charlie Bushnell. Thank you so much for being here, Charlie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I feel like anyone who has listened to Monster Donut before... knows this is a big day because Luke is probably our favorite topic of conversation.
He's an interesting guy.
He is. So welcome to the Luke Castellan show. Do you say Castellan or Castellan?
Oh my god, I say Castellan. I've been saying Castellan this whole time, but I'm a little, I don't know now, because I don't know if you guys saw that post with Rick. And so yeah, now I don't even know. I'm lost.
I don't know. We were talking to Joe Trace, I think, and he said that Rick Riordan's team told him it was Talia, and then it turns out it's Thalia, and it's just, I feel like there's just a lot of wires being crossed.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of debates on set. Like, I remember one day we were debating all day about if it was Thalia, Talia. I'd even heard, like, Thalia before, and, like, Thalia, and so I was like, those are right. But, yeah, we were definitely, a lot of people thought it was Talia, and then we figured out it was Thalia, so we were like, oh, okay. But same with Castellan. And then when I heard Rick say that the other day, like, the first thing I did was text Walker, and I was like, oh my god, I've been saying Castellan wrong this whole time.
I'm team Castellan. You're the keeper of the castle. That's
you know, yeah. I was team Castellan my entire life, and then I think I heard Walker say Castellan, and I was like, oh, I must be wrong, and changed it.
I don't know. I think it's open to interpretation at this point. Like, I think whatever you feel in your heart, just go with that.
Yeah. So we've been kind of starting all of these interviews with a look toward season two, because our friends in the writer's room are working on it as we speak. So first question, Are there any specific scenes or moments from the Sea of Monsters that you are looking forward to seeing come to life? Either Luke scenes or just scenes from the Sea of Monsters that you're particularly passionate about?
Yeah, I mean, so much. I just reread Sea of Monsters, so I got a refresher. Yeah, first of all, I'm just kind of excited to meet all the new characters for the first time, and I'm excited to see who they cast for, like, Tyson and Selena and Charles. And then for Luke, I'm just excited to be on a cruise ship, and I'm excited to see his wardrobe as well.
Yes.
Definitely, you know, he's been in that Camp Half-Blood shirt for the past few years, and so he definitely had to switch it up a bit. Mm-hmm. And how in the book that, you know, he's wearing very, like, preppy clothes, which I think works. I think it works for his energy in Sea of Monsters. He has this kind of, like, very much confidence, almost like cocky energy. And so I think I could see Luke rocking, like, a button down or, like, a polo and some khaki, like, loafers and all that. But yeah, I think overall, I'm excited for, obviously, like, the chariot races. I'm excited to see more of Clarice. Yor's gonna kill it. She's amazing. And Sea of Monsters is kind of like her book. Like, she's in it a lot, and she's a badass. She does some very cool stuff.
Yeah, it's her quest.
Her quest. Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely excited to see more of Clarice, Polyphemus, and then Cersei's Island too. I'm excited for that.
There are just so many good scenes in Sea of Monsters.
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much. And I can't wait to get the scripts and see what they do with it.
I just, seeing what they've built with season one so far as well, with everyone's, where they're starting out with their arcs and knowing, like, what's in the book, I'm just so excited. Like, I can see all these opportunities in my brain where I think they're going to take things a little differently that I'm just so excited to see.
Yeah, like, I was, while you were talking about, like, how sort of overconfident and cocky Luke comes across in Sea of Monsters, I was thinking about, like, one of my favorite scenes in the Sea of Monsters is the encounter with Luke on the Princess Andromeda, where he shows Percy and Annabeth and Tyson the golden coffin. And I feel like that scene is one that, like you mentioned, like, there are certain scenes that I'm excited to see them play with and change, because I feel like that being the first time that Percy, Luke, and Annabeth are seeing each other after the Lightning Thief, like, I feel like their relationships have kind of, a couple of things have been fundamentally changed about, like, the way that Luke sees Percy or the way that Percy sees Luke. And then we introduced Annabeth to the betrayal scene at the end of the Lightning Thief, and it's like there's so much more that scene can do now. So that's just one that I'm looking at. I'm looking at for
absolutely.
That one.
I'm also just looking forward to, like, that fight between Luke and Percy, because me and Walker had such a good time, you know, doing that final fight during the betrayal scene, and so I know that's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, no, I'm excited to. I feel like Annabeth being there in that for the betrayal definitely adds a whole new dynamic, because, you know, obviously she wasn't there in the book, and she's kind of like, she's kind of in denial about Luke, I feel like, throughout the whole series. But yeah, the fact that she was there and, like, saw it with her own eyes now, like, I'm excited to see how they go about that. And you know, is she gonna be just more angry towards Luke? Like, I don't know what they're gonna do, but it's gonna be good.
Yeah, I feel like season two feels like the time to invest in the Luke and Annabeth dynamic, because I feel like we've invested a lot in, like, the Luke and Percy dynamic in the first season, and now it's like I even just the book, like, Sea of Monsters feels like it, a lot of it is Percy just kind of observing the way that Annabeth talks about Luke and the way that she talks about Thalia and her past, and, like, it's a lot of kind of uncovering that. So that's something I'm very much looking forward to.
Yes, me too.
So, taking it back a little bit, speaking of the Luke Annabeth and the Luke Percy relationship, one of the things that we talked about a lot when we were sort of covering the show was we were wondering what Luke's perspective was in his relationship with Percy, and at, like, at what point the turning points were. So we were wondering if you had your own sort of idea going in, like, what sort of was going through Luke's mind throughout the series, but especially in, like, episode two we were talking about when they're spending all that time at camp.
Me and Walker have talked about this. And we think that Luke and Percy, like, were actually friends. Like, I don't think Luke was faking any of it. I think he genuinely wanted to befriend Percy. And, you know, the fact that they made that change from the book in that final scene where, you know, obviously in the book, Luke kind of just takes Percy out to the woods and is like, okay, I'm going to kill you now. But in the show, it's like he tries to recruit him. And so I think Luke, you know, throughout the show, I think he sees a lot of himself in Percy because, you know, Percy definitely understands where Luke is coming from. But I think Percy is just like the only reason why he doesn't go to Luke's side is because Luke has been a part of this world for so much longer than he has. And I mean, this has been Luke's entire life, you know, and he sees kind of just like nothing positive about it. Whereas Percy is still like, what, like it's been like a couple weeks at this point, if even that. And so I think he's still holding on to hope. And of course, like, you know, he has that interaction with his dad, and he has Annabeth and Grover. And so he's still holding on to like hope about the gods and this world in general. Whereas Luke has kind of lost all hope. But I think, I think Luke truly believed that Percy would join his side in the end there. And I think he was sort of just buttering him up all season to make that happen. And so, yeah, like I said, I don't think Luke was faking any of it. I don't think he was like playing him the whole time. I think he genuinely was like saw a lot of himself in Percy and just wanted to make that happen.
And I just think that's so interesting because, I mean, especially given the t-shirt, right? We have to talk about the class of it all. But I think that's so interesting, too, considering that in the show, Luke is the one who introduces Percy to this idea that's, like, a very integral piece of being a hero in, like, Greek mythology. It's huge in the Iliad, especially. So I just think that that's such an interesting thing, too, where it's, like, he's sort of his mentor figure, and he is the one that is sort of showing him, at first, at least, all of the good things about the world.
That is a good point. Yeah, he definitely is, like, you know, I kind of like that change from the book, or from the books, because isn't that, that's kind of Annabeth's job in the first book, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was necessary for the show. I think it was a good change that they made Luke be that guy, to kind of show Percy the ropes and be that older brother mentor figure to him. Because I think it just makes that, you know, that final scene hurt that much more. Because ideally, you know, what we wanted to achieve was we wanted Luke to come across as this nice guy, like this kind of calming, cool presence at camp. And so, yeah, we really wanted to achieve that so that the audience, you know, everyone who, I'm sure most of the viewers read the book, so they knew what was coming. But, you know, for the people who didn't read the books, we still wanted them to be surprised at the end. And so I'm glad that they made Luke that role instead of Annabeth.
I think also, like, it's not necessarily a contradiction, right? Because he's still, I feel like there is still so much that Luke still yearns for within this world, even if he maybe doesn't want to admit it quite out loud. So yeah. I think, like, having him and Percy be able to connect on that level at that point in time where they're both really disillusioned with their godly parents, I think was a really special connection to make.
Yeah, no, I think Luke, he definitely does have this sort of fascination with glory, you know? I mean, he talks about it a lot. And in the end, I mean, that's kind of what, like, he achieves, you know, in The Last Olympian, that final sacrifice he makes. But, yeah, I think part of him, I mean, I said that he lost all hope, but I think subconsciously part of him wants to, you know, is so obsessed with glory because I think a part of him still does want to kind of, like, impress his father and, you know, because he's felt abandoned his whole life. Like, Hermes basically abandoned him when he was a baby. And so I think that's enough to make a kid kind of feel like that they're not enough. And then when he did have the chance to go on a quest that Hermes sent him on, you know, it didn't go well. And it's something that Hercules already did. So, you know, he was like, he even says it himself. He's like, where's the glory in repeating what others have done? And so I think, you know, I think he just wants to show the world and specifically his father that, you know, he's someone, you know.
While we're talking about sort of the way that this the reveal works at the end of the season, for that scene, the scene with Luke in the woods, I feel like that is like one of the most essential scenes in the entire series, and to like you really have to nail the reveal at the end of season one. I'm curious, like, how do you prepare for a moment that you know is like it has to sell everything that's going on this season? You have to tell him and the audience about the Golden Age. You have to tell them about Kronos. You have to tell them, everyone, what your plans were. And it's like the entire season rests on this sort of monologue that you have at the end of the season. So how did you prepare for that?
Yeah, I think I mean, first thing I did, obviously, was just kind of read that part in the book over and over again. Obviously, it's different than what goes down in the book, but still just kind of getting the feel for it. But, you know, I think something that when we were working on that final scene, it kind of just, I feel like it all just happened very naturally, actually. Like, I think we shot that for like 3 days. We were on the volume stage, and so, you know, there was a lot of moving parts, and they had to like move the whole stage around. So it was like a 3 day shoot. And so, you know, over that time, Walker and I, we had a lot of time to really talk about the scene, and we had a lot of help from our acting coach on set, Andrew, who's the best, and he really helped us out. But, you know, I feel like me and Walker like really got to connect on such a deep level during that scene, and like so much of it just happened that, like, you know, like the tears in our eyes and all that, like none of that was in the script. Like it just happened, you know, like it just sort of happened. And I'm kind of glad that they went for the more empathetic approach. Like I think people understand this version of Luke a lot more than the book version. In the book, he's definitely just kind of like the villain, you know, the bad guy. Whereas this Luke is, you know, we get to see more where he's coming from and why he's doing what he's doing, and that he tries to recruit Percy, which I think is a good change as well. But yeah, no, it all just like happened very naturally, and just like had a lot of conversations on set with everyone, and especially Walker and Andrew and Dan and John and, you know, Jet, the director. I remember like feeling so present in that moment during the filming of that scene, especially Walker. Like I felt like I was just feeling all the feelings that Luke was feeling in that moment. And I think Walker was, same for Walker with Percy. And I think it turned out really well. I'm very happy with the final version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. We were just talking about how, like, you come across simultaneously, like, so earnest while telling Percy this and showing him Backbiter. But also, like, you know, we were talking with John about how it also seems like Luke understands that he's the bad guy here, but like can't fully understand exactly why he's the bad guy, but like he understands on some level that he's betraying Annabeth, or that he almost hurt Grover.
100%.
It's just a very multifaceted performance.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think he knows that what he's doing is not wrong, because I think he truly believes that, you know, he's in the right here. I think he thinks he's on the right side of history here. But yeah, it just goes against everything that they've learned, I guess. It goes against the whole world they were brought up in. You know, defying the gods, like, that's just something you don't do. But he was like, I'm going to do it. But yeah, especially in that moment with Annabeth, when, you know, we figure out that she's been listening this whole time. And I think in that, yeah, like, the fact that he just kind of runs away instead of facing her, because he knows, like, that it's just, like, too late. Like, there's no explaining this to her. Like, he just knows this looks bad for him, even though he still stands behind what he's doing. Like you said, he just doesn't understand why they can't see what he's seeing, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's something, like, especially in the show version of Luke as well, that I saw so much was, like, how much all of these little tiny things are just, like, in the periphery, like, haunting him. Like, one of my favorite moments from your performance was in episode 3, in the scene where you're giving Percy the shoes. And you sort of heaved this deep sigh before you said Maya to show him how it worked, how the shoes work. And that actually made me realize that I'd never, like, looked up the word before. Like, I sort of knew it was, like, Maya's the mother of Hermes in mythology, but I'd never really thought about it. And I looked it up. It actually means, like, good mother. And also, Maya is the origin of the word May. So, like, every time he used this magic item, presumably, he had to think about his mom.
Yeah. I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't either until I looked it up, because I was like, wait, there's so much weight to the way you delivered that line, where I was like, I feel like there's something here. So I looked into it. And it was just like, oh, wow. And then also in episode 8, when you're drawing, like, the H with Backbiter to use your, like, again, your other magic item, it feels like you're sort of having to always, like, Luke is sort of always stuck having to acknowledge the existence of his parents, even though he's trying to get out of that cycle and get out of that world in, like, his own way. I don't know. I love what the writers and also you've done to bring Luke to life in this series.
Thank you. Yeah, we definitely wanted to drop, like, a couple hints of, like, you know, maybe Luke isn't too fond of this world or the gods. And, you know, because he does that in the book as well. Like, there are moments where, I mean, Percy even clocks it, where he's, like, he's talking about Hermes at some point. And it's been a while since I've read The Lightning Thief. But he, you know, like, and then Percy's like, the way he said that, like, there, I don't know, there's something weird about the way he said that. And so, yeah, we definitely wanted to drop little hints here and there, kind of displaying Luke's distaste towards the gods and specifically his father. But yeah, I think it's all just like, it's a sensitive subject for him, you know? Luke has a rough past, and I think it's hard for him to revisit that sometimes.
I was just thinking, like, every scene that Luke has kind of has to serve a dual purpose, because Luke has all of these ulterior motives, but also, like John said, in our interview with him, he said there's not a scene in the show where Luke is pretending to be anybody other than who he is. And so you kind of have to play these kind of two sides of Luke, but it's always just like, it's just Luke.
Yeah, Luke, he is just being himself. Like, he's not trying to hide who he is. I think he was just waiting for the right moment to let that all out. But yeah, I think there's just definitely, like I said, there are moments where we just tried to drop little hints of his, how he's actually feeling. Like, I remember for the burnt offering scene, when I'm telling Percy about you burn the piece that you'll miss the most, because then they know that you really care and they'll listen. And like, there's, I kind of do, like, I didn't even realize, like, I went and rewatched it not too long ago. Like, he almost like rolls his eyes in that moment, like saying that, like, oh, they'll listen, because he knows that, like, most of the time they don't, or at least that's been his experience, you know, every time he's kind of tried to maybe ask Hermes for help or whatever it might be, he was never really there for him. And so I think he all thinks it's, you know, excuse my French, but like, I think he thinks it's kind of bullshit, you know, the whole thing. And so, yeah, I don't think Luke is really like trying to hide anything. I don't think he's like, I think he is just being himself, and
yeah,
you get little hints of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially like anytime Luke is on screen with Chris Rodriguez, I was like sitting forward. I was like, there's something, these two are having a conversation that only people who have read the books can understand right now. Okay, so I want to switch gears slightly, because we're giving Luke a lot of sympathy, as we should, as we always do. But I do want to ask, because Luke is like kind of a controversial character, you know, a lot of people love him, but a lot of people hate him. So when you first read the series, or when you first encountered the series, were you immediately Team Luke, or did he take some time to grow on you? Were you a Luke hater?
I mean, here's the thing. My mom read my brother and I the first couple books when we were younger, and I've been aware of Percy Jackson for as long as I can remember, but I hadn't actually read the books until I got the role, and literally like the day I got the role, I went directly to the bookstore and bought all the books and just got right into it, and so, you know, I think I was definitely a little biased towards Luke while reading them, you know, just because I'm playing them, and as an actor, they always say like, you can't really judge your own character. That's just not something you're supposed to do. And so I always tried to understand like where Luke was coming from and remembered, you know, his history and all that. But I mean, I'm a massive fan of the books now. Like, once I started reading them, it was hard for me to put them down. And there were definitely moments where I almost forgot that I was playing Luke, and I was just like enjoying reading the story, and Luke would do something and be like, oh man, Luke, like, what the hell, man? there were definitely moments where I was not proud of Luke. I think, you know, I think Luke's actions, or his feelings, even in the books, are 100% justified. I think it's easy to understand where he's coming from, but yeah, I think some of his actions are not. I think he could have went about it very differently. And I'm excited to see kind of what they do with the show, because we kind of did get this more understanding version of Luke in the show. And so I'm excited to see what they do with that. Is he like, I don't know, like, he definitely, like we were talking about earlier, like in Sea of Monsters, he definitely kind of goes like full villain mode, I feel like.
Yeah.
Cocky energy and like, and his preppy clothes, and so
so easy to hate if you want to.
he is so, you know, part of me thinks like they kind of have to go that route a little bit, because it, just for storytelling purposes, like Percy is the hero of the story and Luke is the antagonist, and so, you know, I would understand if they went a little bit, but I think it's important to still get little glimpses of Luke's humanity, I guess, and what he's feeling.
I mean, I feel like I particularly enjoyed the like level of confidence and cockiness that exists in Sea of Monsters because of how much it gets like broken down in the following books. You know, like he seems like he's totally confident and in control in that book, and then like even by Titan's Curse, it seems like he's realized that like he's in too deep. So
yeah. I feel like, yeah, I know. I feel like that's the only book where he really feels like he's like stepped fully into his power. I think he's on like a power trip for sure in Sea of Monsters. And then I think he comes to his senses a little more in the other books and maybe realizes like, oh man. Yeah, like you said, he's in too deep. But yeah, very excited for what's to come. And I'm excited to see where they go with it.
Were there any scenes that you as the reader, like the ones you mentioned where you as the reader were getting mad at Luke, that excite you now more as an actor, where you're like, oh, I can't wait to do that, though?
Yeah. I think in Titan's Curse, when he kind of tricks Annabeth into holding his hand, you know, I was like, man, that's like your little sister. Come on now. Can't be doing that. But also, I'm just excited there's so much stuff I'm excited for Luke in the future. Definitely excited to for all the Chronos stuff and when he kind of takes over his body and look at the golden eyes.
Yeah, you've kind of been cast as two people.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I'll have to, I don't know, like if I'll have to come up with a whole new voice or something, or if they'll like do that in
body language. Like
body language. Yeah, no, I'm gonna have to literally create like a whole new character. Oh man, I think also in the beginning of The Last Olympian with Charles on the ship. That was a sad scene, but you know, that wasn't really Luke at that moment. That was technically Chronos, and so I think Luke, I mean, isn't it even in, we find out in Battle of the Labyrinth that he sort of wanted to get out of it, right? Like, didn't he go to Annabeth?
Yeah,
he wanted to run away from it again, and he wanted her to come with him. And so I think he was still kind of like, part of him was like, oh man, I'm in too deep and this is not looking good. But I think he just, he realized there was no turning back. Yeah, there's so much I'm looking forward to. But I'm also really looking forward to the Titan's Curse, just like all the stuff that we didn't get to see in the book with him and Annabeth, because they're pretty much like together throughout the whole book, right?
And so
I'm kind of excited to see what, you know, how they go about that, what those interactions and those conversations are like. I think we'll get to see a lot more of explore a lot more of the Luke Annabeth relationship, hopefully, if we get a season 3. Yeah, there's so much. I can go on and on.
Yeah, I know. I think we made a prediction that we hoped at least there'd be a little bit of like Luke on his quest for that golden apples at some point we'd get to see in the show. And we thought Titan's Curse might be where that goes.
That would be cool, yeah. If they're like reminiscing about the past and some flashbacks would for sure be cool. I also would love to see like, I mean, I don't know if they would have to cast like a younger actor to play me, but I do. I mean, that's not till the battle or the Last Olympian where we get that flashback, him and Hermes at the house. I really hope I do get to do that because, I mean, I just want to do a scene with Lin-Manuel Miranda. Hopefully they can just CGI my face to make me look younger.
Oh, yeah. Does Luke just not have any scenes with Hermes outside of that one?
I don't aside from that, in like at the very end where like doesn't he come and he like, but that's like after,
I think it's like, after high, yeah. Right?
Yeah,
so I think I would just be laying there, which is, I'm okay with that too, you know?
Right.
Yeah, there was a lot of like flashback stuff that I hopefully we get to see at some point, but I don't know, like even when like didn't Ares like catch Luke at some point while he was after he's,
oh yeah,
they had like a fight, and Luke even, it's, they said like Luke was even close to beating him. I think that would be really cool, just because I also want to work with Adam Copeland. He's awesome.
Luke is the kind of character who like you finish the series and then when you reread it you can track like an entire story that you like kind of missed because it was being like fed to you in little hints of like that kind of thing, especially because you get it sort of backwards, like you get his childhood last. And so you have to, like, reread the whole series to, like, fully get the story of Luke. It's so cool. I love Luke.
So do I. He's a complex guy.
So I think since we're coming up on time, we should ask you our last question. So at the end of all of our episodes, we sort of design a bead that's sort of supposed to represent sort of, like, an entire episode or book. And so we have one for the Lightning Thief already, which is the Trident. But if Luke was in charge of the beat design for the Lightning Thief, what do you think he'd put on there to best represent his journey throughout that summer at camp?
Oh, if Luke was in charge. Good question. I think part of me wants to go with Backbiter, just because, I don't know, I feel like Backbiter perfectly kind of symbolizes, like, what it means to be a demigod. Like, it's, you know, it's half steel, half celestial bronze, and same with demigods, like, half human, half god. And it's, like, you know, it's powerful, but, like, you know, dangerous at the same time. So I think Backbiter is one option. Something I was also thinking about was, because I, you know, I listen to your guys' podcast, so I was kind of, like, preparing for this question, because but also, like, even like a hand going in, kind of like when I shake Percy's hand for the first time, kind of just like almost like a handshake, because also at the end, like when he tries to recruit him, like trying to pull him over to his side.
That is so good.
Yeah, either Backbiter or like a hand reaching out, a helping hand, I guess, even though it's not very helping. What do you guys
think? I mean, my first thought was like the lantern, since like both Kronos and Luke carry that lantern and like lighting the way, showing the path forward, trying to lead Percy.
Yeah, that's good.
But I feel like yours is better. I like yours more.
I like the lantern too, though. That's good. Yeah.
I was trying to imagine what like Luke saw when he had Kronos dreams a lot. Like, that was something I was thinking about when I was watching. And I loved the way they looked in the show, like with the desert and around like Tartarus with the campfire. And so I love that image so much. So I feel like I'd go with that one.
Yeah, okay. That's good too. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Charlie. This was really, really wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had such a great time talking to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to Monster Donut. Thank you, Charlie, for joining us. Next time will likely be our season one wrap-up episode. So
yes, finally.
Finally. So if you would like to contribute a question or your own analysis, some thoughts, an argument, whatever, you can send those in to monsterdonutpodcast@gmail.com or send us a message on any of our social media, which is at PJOPod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Please do that by Thursday of this week, which will be, what is that, April 4th.
And if you want to join Charlie and buy yourself a Kleos or Nostos shirt, that can be found on our merch shop, which is monsterdonut.redbubble.com, or the link is in our link tree.
Which is where you can find a link to our Patreon if you want to know what's coming up next, contribute questions to any future interviews that we do, or just get bonus content like our spoiler episode, which is now up.
All the times we talked about things we shouldn't have talked about when we were covering the books.
Right. Art previews, our predictions episode, if you're like curious how what we predicted about the show way back when.
Going forward as well, we're probably going to be posting our season 2 predictions on there when we start getting more information released. We start getting like trailers and stuff. So if you're curious about all of that, check us out.
And so with all of that said, thank you to our patrons. There are a whole bunch of new ones, so we're only going to be listing the paid ones. Window Wells, Roman Console, Latino Kaya, Patty VCK, Bethany from Public Works, Sydney Fox, Joke, Reina Avila Ramirez Arellano, Charlie McNeil, Bronte LeBeau, Ethan Not Nakamura, The Damn Meme Page, Kels, Mason Bowman, Casey Cassidy, Busycat, Natalia Sanchez, Sally May, Melissa Rounds, Oat Milk, Bones of a Carrot, Samantha Hardgrove, Alana, Elena, Melanie Valdez, Pamela Ion, The Kid on Her Own, Jay Thomas, Marie Hunter, Grace Hunker, Jason Broard, and Kaylee. Thank you all so much for joining us over on Patreon. If you would like to be among them, again, the link is in the link tree that's in all of our social media, at PJOPod. Oh, also, if you want to contribute something to our Trials of Apollo wrap-up, that'll be coming someday, too.
That's still happening.
That is on its way. After we do the TV series wrap-up, we're going to do the Trials of Apollo wrap-up. So,
yes. And then most likely we will be reading
Right. And then after, just so everyone knows what our schedule is, after that we'll be reading The Sun and the Star. And then we'll probably get into, like, the movies, the musical, the Greek heroes, Greek, like, Percy Jackson's Greek heroes, Percy Jackson's Greek myths, or Greek gods. I can't remember what the other one's called. And just wrapping up all of the material that we have from, like, the Camp Half-Blood Chronicles, and then doing a big Camp Half-Blood Chronicles wrap-up before moving on to, like, Magnus Chase or the Cain Chronicles.
I can't believe it's March. It's like not. It's like almost April.
This is coming out in April. Thank you all so much. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.